This is the one with an adrenaline kibbutz.
And a bunch of Martian hippies.
And some surfer dudes.
And graphic brutal murder.
Oh, and a god of fear who lives in a wormhole.
Spoilers.
It's called Phobos.
Here we go. Reviewing audiobooks now too, cause we love our Doctor Who.
Encountering we're in Tarmada War, Dalek, Spacetime and Glam Rock.
Stylophones are awful, that's a TARDIS way. We're at Spunk and Merryskin.
That's Kane with a K.
Who back when? Reviewing all of who there is. Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Audiobook by audiobook.
Even those that are godly good, we'll review them all you'll see, so join us on this odyssey.
It's Who Back When. Who back when? Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode A004 of Who Back When, an audiobook podcast, a Doctor Who podcast. Today, we are reviewing an audiobook once again, and thus I am joined by JD. How you doing, JD?
Hello, I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, I'm rad. I'm Ponkin, by the way, in case you didn't know. All right, wait, hang on. Oh my god, we literally said this a moment ago before we started, before we pressed record. Ladies and gentlemen, before we go into our Who Back When review, there is another review that you need to check out. It's a review of not a Doctor Who story. Well, I guess in a way it is, but it is a review of Who Back When, the Doctor Who podcast you are currently listening to. And it's written by one of our fantastic listeners, Gina Guerrero. Thank you so much. You wrote a beautiful review. And you can find a link to it on the Who Back When Facebook page. So if you go to facebook.com/whobackwhen, there's a beautiful link there that you can click. Have a look at it. And you should probably also have a look at the rest of the blog and follow Gina on Twitter. She is at GinaGuerrero1.
So thank you again, Gina, for that. It's a very kind look at the podcast, and we thank you very, very much for taking the time out to do that. And
you know,
of course,
you say kind as though it's like maybe not the most honest look at the podcast. I thought it was a beautifully honest and heartfelt review.
I meant kind in the way that it is. She is obviously kind about the podcast.
I'm teasing you. I'm sorry. Gina, we love you. You are amazing. Thank you so much. Right. Shall we?
We shall. Right. So from one really good review to one really poor episode.
Yep. The audiobook that we're reviewing today is called Phobos. And do you want to maybe give a little mini spoiler alert? Did you like this? Did you not like this?
I've heard worse.
They should put that on the cover. Okay. For those of you who have not listened to Phobos, you're in luck, people, because you're about to be treated to a bite-sized chunk of Who.
Yes, let's. The TARDIS lands on a mountain yet again.
Transpires, the Doc and Lucy are on the Martian adventure moon of Phobos,
which is run by a group of hippies and overrun by a group of Americans.
Also on the moon, supposedly, are a bunch of monsters
who, despite not actually ever being seen by anyone, promptly kill a load of people.
Yes, are still considered mere myths even after that fact.
So the Doc and Lucy Miller must now solve the Martian conundrum and, as per usual, save the day.
Bada bing. There you go, people who have not listened to Phobos. You're welcome. Okie dokie. So, we start Phobos on a screen. There's this chick, her name is Chrissy, and she has the thickest, I'm thinking faux Australian accent, this side of the galaxy. Would you agree with me?
I would say it's faux Australian, sometimes veering into faux American, sometimes going into faux New Zealand, and then back to faux American, faux Australian again. It is very poor.
Either way, it is insanely thick. I mean, crazy thick. She is laying this on like there's no tomorrow.
It is season one, Neighbours.
Nice. Well, anyway, she screams, no, not to worry, ladies and gentlemen, she's perfectly fine. She is, however, a crazy thrill seeker who has just been cowabungoing left and right and has gotten herself sucked into a whirlpool inside some sort of ice cave. And she's then radioed by her hombre, Scott, a.k.a. the Scottmeister, to see if she's okay. She gives us a pretty detailed report of her cowabunga adventure. And, in fact, even says, this is the word she uses, it is awesome.
Sadly, during this entire episode, we will get dude, awesome, the need for speed,
yep,
and every other possible cliche from 1980s surfer movies.
So, with the exception of the need for speed, those are all expressions that I use on a daily basis.
Well, it's not my fault that you come from a 1980s surfer movie.
Fair point. Touche. Anyway, she is now stuck in the cave. She's fine, but she's stuck in the cave. And Skopmeister needs to lower a rope into this cave to basically, well, help her back out. But he is then suddenly attacked by something. And we kick off this audiobook, this story, with a loud, brutal murder. And to quote Chrissy, awesome.
This was very good. And this is pre-title sequence at this point.
Yeah.
Very atmospheric. You've got brutal murder. You've got, you know, what you think is at the start, a murder or a death, and in fact turns out to be an adrenaline junkie. It's very, very good. The music is good. The sound of the wind and the caves are all very, very good. You can actually imagine that this is a snow ice covered glacier in winter. The snow falling. It is very, very good. And then the title sequence happens.
Yeah, which is also good. And then the rest of the story happens, which is less good. But anyway.
So the TARDIS materializes.
Yeah.
And Lucy climbs out of the TARDIS and is instantly pissed off with the Doctor because they've landed halfway up a mountain again. For the second time in two episodes. And she just has had enough of this now. She actually believes the Doctor doesn't know what the hell he's doing with the TARDIS. And frankly, we agree with her. Because so far in these audiobooks, they've never landed where they want to. They've never landed anywhere safe. And most of the time, they land either halfway up a mountain or in the middle of a street.
Well, you know what? To be fair, pretty much the same thing was happening in Hartnell. Wait, oh, actually, hang on. I guess the period between Hartnell and McGann, I'm not particularly au fait with. I remember Tom Baker actually knowing where he was going, but I may be misremembering that because I was a kid. But at what point would you say, I mean, being a proper connoisseur of this, at what point does he actually figure out how to maneuver the freaking TARDIS?
You say that about Tom Baker, and you're mostly right, because at the end of the Key to Time, in order to get away from the Black Guardian, he puts a randomizer in the TARDIS, so he doesn't know where he's going. And that happens during the Tom Baker era.
Okay.
During the John Pertwee era.
That doesn't seem like the wisest thing to do.
No, it was a stupid idea and they got rid of it very quickly.
Oh, good. It's like, oh, well, I just bought a new car. I'm sick and tired of knowing precisely where I'm going, so I'm now going to install this thing that occasionally turns the wheel upside down.
Yeah, I would say that the Hartnell and Troughton eras are aimless wandering.
Okay.
The start of the John Pertwee era is him exiled on Earth. So he doesn't go anywhere anyway. And when he does go somewhere, it is deliberately sent. Once you leave that sort of exile, he has quite a lot of control over the TARDIS. Right the way through. Apart from this few Tom Baker episodes where the randomizer's in. And it's such a bad idea that, you know, it just makes no sense. And so right the way through post that randomizer era, he's been able to control it fine.
Okay, interesting. All right.
Because he seems to go where he wants to go.
Yeah, more or less. Like, I'm thinking very, very start of Smith, when he wants to go and pick up his soon-to-be companion. He meets her first as a girl, says, I'll be right back, and then comes back, you know, two decades later.
Yeah, you know, that's still a lot of control compared to the Hartnell era when he presses a button and he does not know where he is going.
Okay, that is true.
I think coming up in the classic episode reviews will be the 12th part Dalek's Master Plan.
Oh, that's going to be amazing.
And there is deliberately a part of that where he has to steer the TARDIS.
Okay.
And that is probably the first time it's accurately steered in Doctor Who, ever.
Wow.
But, you know, I dare say that when you get up to that, you will have your own opinions on that.
Yeah, presumably. All right, cool. Thank you. Awesome tangent. Yeah, where were we?
We were halfway up a mountain with Lucy Miller.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So it is the year, by the way. Sorry, I had to find this on the internet. I don't remember hearing this in the audiobook. It's the year 2589.
Yeah, the Doctor says it quite quietly because he's shouting from inside the TARDIS to Lucy, who's outside in a snow landscape, probably wearing some sort of Primark t-shirt.
Yeah, Primark. Primark should give us money for this podcast, by the way. All right, so anyway, she is bickering and complaining and is then promptly caught in a net. There are these two dudes named Hayden and Drew, or Hayde and Drew Meister for short, who thought that she was a monster. I believe that's known as foreshadowing. Cut to a different part of Phobos, where a very odd couple is disembarking a spacecraft.
One of them is called Farl. And you can tell he's not meant to be normal by the fact that they've put some sort of voice modulation on him.
Yeah, he speaks with like a weird reverb.
And this bit is basically whinging about Ryanair.
Yes, that is exactly what I was thinking. It's like, oh my god, you can't flip the seats back, everything's uncomfortable, like everything costs a little bit extra.
Packed in like cattle, cheap flights, and so basically they're travelling Ryanair.
Yeah.
And then, my favourite bit of the entire episode, it's revealed that they're steering an Zarbi-shaped buggy. admittedly, they say a big ant-shaped
buggy. Yeah. But it is.
You know, in the 26th century, everyone has taken the design inspiration from the web planet. So, I'm trying to make light of this episode because, trust me, this is all you're getting. they get off their ship, and we have therefore met four guest casts so far.
Yeah. Oh, this couple, by the way, sorry to cut you off. This couple, by the way, they are Farl, who is a Githian. I've never heard of that before. I don't know if that appears in any other Doctor Who story. Nope, you're shaking your head. Okay. And I assume his human girlfriend at this point, Amy. Do we know that she's human for sure?
We don't know she's human, but she doesn't have any voice modulation, and everyone else in this episode is human.
Fair enough. Yep.
So
she's human. All right, then.
So we have Drew and Hayde, who are... Drew is played by Ben Silverstone. He did a lot of theatre acting, but has become a barrister, so he never did much again. Hayde, on the other hand...
Career progression.
Hayde, well, he got a first from Cambridge, so...
Well done. Well done, Drewmeister.
So Hayde is played by John Schwab, who has a prior Doctor Who connection.
Ooh.
Or post to this Doctor Who connection, actually. Where he actually plays someone called Bywater. It's a fairly small role, and it's in the episode called Dalek in the Christopher Eccleston series.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I believe I'm going to have to screenshot that for the website. Nice.
So the man and the woman, so Amy and Farl, are played by... Amy is played by Catriona Olsen, who plays practically everything.
She's the headhunter.
She plays the headhunter.
Nice.
Meanwhile, and I wish you to not... go off and refuse to do the rest of this podcast when I tell you that the guy playing Farl is played by Tim Sutton.
No way!
Now, Tim Sutton, sadly, composed the music for the Horror of Glam Rock.
Oh, wait, I'm thinking of someone completely different. Wait, what? He's a composer? He did... No.
Yes, he did the music for... He does the music for a few of these, and he's done a couple of bit parts, but he composed the music for Horror of Glam Rock.
Yeah, I'm really disheartened by that, but that's okay. Tim Curry is who I was thinking of, by the way.
You think? Yeah, it's not him.
No, it's not him. All right.
So they arrive via Ryanair and go on the Zarbi buggy.
Yeah.
And they're complaining about the buggy steering, and this woman, Eris, turns up.
Yeah.
And, you know, she offers to look at the buggy, so she says she's the camp engineer. And
yeah, sort of,
because, you know, she does it because no one else does.
Yeah.
And this is when you find out that the Lunar Park is in fact a hippie commune.
Fucking hippies. She actually explains that they're squatting. Like, it used to be that, or it was meant to be this very elaborate holiday resort, but for some reason construction on the resort never finished, and therefore they're just squatting there. It is a Martian adrenaline kibbutz. All right, anyway, keep going.
Eris is played by Neris Hughes. Who's Neris that? Hughes is a Welsh actress. She's one of these 1980s TV show people, and she was in a lot of things in the 1980s. She basically played the district nurse, and basically any time anyone needed a Welsh lady of a certain age.
Oh, I see.
But she also has a prior Doctor Who connection.
Oh my god, nice. Okay, hit me.
She played a character called Todd in the Peter Davison episode, Kinder. She was actually quite important in the episode. She was...
And it is
quite a famous Doctor Who episode.
Yeah.
So okay. She was that.
Very good. Nice bit of trivia there. Thank you very much.
So anyway, Amy starts giving us background scenery and saying, you know, how the ice is sparkling like it's precious stones. And, you know, it's all very natural and spectacular looking, and there's all these things going on.
Yeah, I'm not buying it, by the way. Listening to this audiobook, and I listened to it twice, never, at no point did I go, oh, I really wish I could be there. It just sounds like a really cold, dreadful place.
See, I like cold, dreadful places, and not even I would want to go to this place.
Anyway.
So meanwhile, back with Lucy, she has some scathing words for the two surfer dudes,
yep.
And, you know, points out that, why are they doing this? And they explain, because there was a monster.
Yeah, they say, there's this other guy, this chap on, what, in the camp, who's been saying that he's even seen monsters. Later on, they're referred to as Phobians. Terrible name, by the way. They thought that she was one of them, hence they threw a net on her. Kind of fun, kind of whatever. They also tell both Doc and Lucy that they're sort of in an environment dome, and we get this pretty funny scene, actually, where the Doc is jumping up and down, presumably taking a little while longer than normal to land back on his feet, to demonstrate a change in gravity.
It's wrong. Give it a try, Lucy. Jump!
No! Give that a rest!
That's pretty funny.
Lucy is not happy about this.
No, because, the Doc starts dropping science on them. Lucy yawns.
And, you know, the Doctor then says,
ignore her. I've literally known savages with better manners.
And to be honest, I'm taking anything good from this episode and saying it, because, frankly, there's so little of it.
I'm looking forward to the mini review. Okay.
So Drew and Haid, mentioned
HD.
HD. So High Def mention that there is a wormhole on this mountain.
Yeah.
And what people do on this wormhole is that they jump down it.
Yeah, they bungee jump into it.
And we'll get more on that bungee jumping later.
Yeah. Doc is intrigued, clearly wants to see this wormhole. So together they, yeah, continue ascending the mountain. Blam! Cut to My Name is Fall, who has inflated this portable cabin upside down. And he and Amy Licious are joined by, spoiler alert, the old gringo that the dudes mentioned just a moment ago. His name is Kai Tobias. In my notes, he appears as Kai Wynn, by the way. And he helps them with the cabin to just, like, turn it back the right way around.
Which is quite good, because we've obviously done exactly the same joke, but he's listed in my notes as Kai Opaka.
Oh, so, I like it!
meanwhile, on DS9 podcast... So anyway, you know, he's putting this cabin up, and frankly, I put tents up just as badly. So Kai and Fall start grunting and groaning and putting the cabin upright.
Yeah.
And Kai asks whether they're with Drennies. Now, Drennies is the absolutely abysmal nickname the self-appointed nickname of the adrenaline junkies. So these people that go bungee jumping and sliding up and down mountains.
Yeah.
Fall completely turns around and goes, no, they're absolutely none of that.
No, they're just travelers or something like that. They actually seem a little bit secretive. Like, they don't want to say why they're there. And we do find out later on why, like, that they actually have a reason for this.
So on Phobos, you have these two completely different types of people now. You've got... It is exactly like going on a skiing holiday in the Alps. You've got people who are here for the hot chocolate and the fondue and the, you know, the pleasant looking glaciers. And you've got the surfer dudes backpacking who are snowboarding every day.
Yeah, exactly.
Kai Tobias, thankfully, is played by Timothy West, CBE, who has basically starred in every single period drama ever made by the BBC. He's played Churchill a number of times. He's never actually, I don't think anyway, done Doctor Who.
But this is the second time in a row that one of the peripheral characters has previously portrayed Churchill.
That is absolutely correct.
Yeah, nice. Maybe that's a trope to track.
And, Timothy West's son, Samuel West, will also be in some of the Eighth Doctor adventures. So we'll come back to him later.
Rad. Samuel West. Sorry, is that not the name of the sheriff in Wild Wild West?
Isn't that Jim West?
Oh, damn it. Oh, I thought I had something worthy of a high five there. No, all right, I stand corrected. Anyway, so we've learned the term Drennies now, and Kai Wynn also begins to talk about these creatures, these monsters, that live inside the wormhole. Cut to the mountain and the wormhole. where Doc, Lucy, and High Def are staring into the abyss, and one might assume the abyss is staring right back into them. The Doc shouts into it, zero echo. Nada.
And we get the Doctor and Lucy having probably their only funny conversation in this episode.
oh, there's a pun!
The Doctor does possibly the worst joke ever done by anyone on an audiobook. Where Lucy's a bit miserable that this isn't some sort of sparkling spatial anomaly. It's a bloody hole in the ground. And the Doctor turns round and goes, "No need to get all holier than thou about it." And to be fair, Lucy doesn't particularly like the pun at all. And so she asks, High Def, what's the penalty for punching a smug fop on the nose?
Yeah.
But actually from this, we do find out that there aren't actually any laws on Phobos.
Yes.
Because it is
run by
a bunch of hippies.
Yeah. They even say that, don't they?
Yeah, they actually say it was run by a bunch of hippies that weren't too big on rules. And this is when they find out that they're going to jump into it via bungee jump.
Yeah, exactly. And we get this disgustingly gnarly dude type conversation where they're talking about no one knows how deep this hole is. That's what she said. But you bungee jump into it and the Drenny who picks the longest rope gets all the cred, all the respect. Anyway,
thankfully back at the base.
Yeah, back with Amy, the incredible Fall, and Kai Wynn, we're being treated to the etymology of Phobos, which
is fine. It's explaining things.
No, this is not fine, my friend. Okay, the reason this is not fine is precisely the same reason I absolutely freaking hate the inclusion of the Romulans in Star Trek. Why would you have slight Star Trek tangent. You have the Romulans. They occupy two planets. They are known as Romulus and Remus. They have a senate. They are essentially Romans, but in outer space. Here, we have the planet Phobos, where, spoiler alert, fear, Phobos being the Greek word for fear plays a pretty big part in this story. You've got thrill seekers, and you've got whatever it is that's living inside the wormhole. What the shit? This is not cool.
The cool thing is that they are explaining and mentioning where the words Deimos and Phobos come from, that they're the sons of Mars and they're the moons of Mars. That bit is fine.
Okay, yeah, educational show.
Don't forget, Doctor Who did start off as educational, and frankly, this is the only educational bit you're going to get in this episode, unless you want to bungee jump down a wormhole. So, I see your point, and it happens all the time. And, you know, one of your favourite Doctor Who episodes was The Keys of Marinus.
Yeah.
Which had an arid desert called Aridius. They had, a sleeping brain city called Morphoton. You know,
Oh, I don't even remember that name.
Yeah. that's where the brains were. And, you know, bear in mind that this has been happening since Keys of Marinus. It is not something new. And, you know, this one you've just got to roll with.
Fine.
And it gets worse, right? You know, when you've got a desert called Aridius, you've got, you know, all of those things in your favourite so far, I believe, Doctor Who episode on Who Back When.
Second favourite. Yeah, favourite being Dalek Invasion of Earth.
But it is very close.
Yeah,
saying that, you know, a fear monster, spoilers, is on the planet, on the moon, Phobos. I'll give them that. You know, it shouldn't make sense, but yeah.
You're fine. All right.
Suspend disbelief.
I am. Look at my face. This is me suspending disbelief. All right. Let's go on. Let's get this over with. So, we hear a couple of more monster anecdotes, and then basically, in my notes, I've put it down as Immortal Beloved style segue straight into a monster howling nearby.
Yeah, afraid so.
Yeah. So Kai Winn says he fears that it's the monsters. And having just explained, well, we didn't really get into much detail here, but what he says is there are all these monsters. He's seen them on a few occasions, but no one else has ever seen them. They've never actually disturbed anyone, but they do seem rather dangerous. But there's, like, basically no real evidence of them being a threat. He then immediately says, I fear it's the monsters, and, I quote, they're getting closer every day. What? How? How does he know that?
You know, you've got two types of conspiracy theorists. You've got the one who is like Gorilla Tom in Blood of the Daleks,
yeah.
Who no one believes, but we know as an audience that he's right.
Yeah.
This guy, on the other hand, just seems to be either batshit crazy
or full of crap.
Or full of crap.
Yeah.
And as we'll find out, it's both.
Mm. Anyway.
Meanwhile, back at High Def.
Yeah, we get a cutscene.
They have a 3-kilometer bungee cord.
Yeah.
Now, which apparently, when it reaches the end of its length, i.e. 3 kilometers, keep bearing that in mind, it will snap back and bring them up. So, bear in mind, a bungee cord that's 3 kilometers long, in free fall, will, without fail, kill the person when they arrive 3,000 meters down and then instantly snap back up. Because you're going from free fall one direction, Newton's laws of motion, to free fall upward. Instantly. I don't think people bothered understanding physics in this one.
Wish we could do a video podcast. Your face, priceless.
Anyway, the H bit of HD.
Yeah.
Just jumps into the hole.
Yeah, he cowabungas right in there.
Lucy and us think this is ridiculous, but Drew, the other half of HD, is a bit more reticent about this. He's obviously not the adrenaline junkie that Hayden is.
No.
But, you know, he has a conversation with Lucy and, you know, he mentions all the other wondrous activities that you can get up to. And spoiler alert, not any of them are any important to the rest of the episode.
Nothing is important to this episode. But yeah, anyway, Lucy, being slightly bored out of her mind, gets a pair of binoculars and tries to stare down the wormhole. Can't see anything, it's just pitch black. But then she starts looking around, and she sees this girl at a distance with, like, a dude laying lifeless before her. And this is abso-freaking-lutely Chrissy and the Scottmeister from the pre-theme tune scene. And then, maybe, what, I'm going to say 12 seconds later.
Oh,
Hayden has he has fallen 3 kilometres and then flung back up 3 kilometres, 12 seconds.
Yeah, he's going at Mach 10 at this point.
Yeah.
This isn't free fall. This is way beyond free fall at this point. He is a jet engine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So not only is he obviously dead at this point.
He's also, like, skinless. He's basically just this bloody rope comes back, I'm assuming.
Well, that's what we assume. But sadly, Hayden returns.
Yeah.
Seemingly unharmed by this magical journey that he has taken.
Yeah.
But, you know, normally in Doctor Who, we can suspend some disbelief because, you know, you've got a time machine, you've got things travelling faster than light, but this just makes no sense whatsoever in any way.
Anyway, so they decide they're going to take their zombie buggy and go past Chrissy and Scottmeister on their way back to camp.
Cutscene to Amy, Fahl and Kai Winn.
Yep.
And
Eris Bueller, I think.
I didn't realise she was still there, but, you know... At this point, right, frankly, they're cutting between them for no reason at this point. So, Fahl wants to go. Kai turns around and... Oh, yes, because Eris is the one whinging at Kai and saying, why are you telling these people shit? And an important thing happens that she asks Kai to go and check on a girl called Rosa.
Rosa, yes.
Because Rosa still isn't awake. So we don't know what's happened to Rosa at this point.
We also don't know who Rosa is. We just know that she's some girl who turned up, had a little bit of a tumble and is unconscious. Very important to the story, though.
Stuff happens. Yeah. They talk about stuff. and then we move back to the important story.
Yeah, exactly. We get a little bit of like blah-de-blah-de-blah. Eris Bueller tells the Incredible Fall and Amy Licious that, like, don't worry, no such thing as monsters, everything's fine, and no one's ever seen them besides Kai.
So the amazing foursome of HD, the Doctor and Lucy arrive at the girl. HD recognise that this is Scott and Chrissy, and, you know, because they'd met and probably traded stories about, you know, which were the most gnarly slopes to go down.
Yeah.
And
awesome, dude. 3 kilometers, no way, man. That sort of thing.
So
anyway, cut back to Kai Winn and Eris Bueller's cabin, where they're a couple, by the way, where Kai Winn is disappointed that the Incredible Fall and Amy Licious didn't buy his cockamamie bullshit fairy tale about monsters.
And then, as if by magic, HD, the Doctor and Lucy turn up.
Yeah,
because at this point, they're just skipping unimportant bits.
Yeah. So the Scooby Gang has arrived, and they're outside CSIing Scott Meister's savaged corpse.
Oh, no. I'll get onto this later.
Oh, apologies. No.
You haven't skipped anything, but you've just mentioned something that I will come back to later. I'll point it out now.
Okay.
That this is Scooby-Doo.
Oh, this is, this is a Hanna-Barbera episode.
So they stick the injured people in sick bay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kai Winn, and, you know, is absolutely convinced at this point that the Phobians are around, and, you know, Scott was killed by them, and Chrissy was terrified by them. The Doctor does actually admit that this isn't natural, this isn't human.
Yeah, it's true.
Has done this.
And Chrissy, you know, can't say, you know, she can't confirm or deny, because she is in shock. She's basically just cut off from everyone at this point.
Eris at this point says, we'll talk about all of this later, everyone, you need to get inside, because it'll be dark soon. Rather ominously, like she knows something, but spoilers, she doesn't.
Yeah, and also, is it just me, or is this an entirely meaningless line because we do a time cut to the following morning instead?
Yes, wibbly wobbly timey wimey, it's morning.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be dark. Happened. Everything's going to be dangerous. Bing bong, rooster's crowing. What? Ugh.
So, Naked Drew is woken by Hayden.
Yep.
And then we get some male bonding, and they
We get dude bonding.
Yes, and they're going to go snowboarding.
Grav boarding, please. Excuse me, you literally just offended the entire grav boarding community. Just that, we also get about 2 minutes worth of nothing but dude talk. Anyway,
To be honest, I actually, as characters, I quite like HD.
Oh, no, characters in here, they are clearly the best ones.
Yeah, I actually quite like HD, but sadly, they're not given anything of any importance to do.
No.
So anyway, the Doctor comes up to Lucy, and Lucy is drinking coffee, a woman after my own heart. And she's on her third cup of coffee, and she's just grouchy.
Yeah.
Because she didn't get any sleep.
She's still thinking about Chrissy's shocked face.
And they overhear Amy and Farr.
Yeah.
And in a ridiculously pointless subplot, it appears that they are going to be found out about something.
Exactly. I imagine this was popped in not as a ridiculously unnecessary subplot, but to maybe cause some suspicion their way, so that listeners could go, oh, well, maybe they're the ones who just killed people.
Sadly, that would be fine if Lucy Miller, who as an audience identification figure, we believe what she says.
Yeah.
Turns around and calls them Polly Pocket and Hagrid. So instantly you have this image of this sort of young, pretty, flighty girl and a lovable 10-foot-tall person played by Robbie Coltrane. So at no point could these people be evil.
Holy shit balls. Either I've missed something in the chronology of, the literary canon of this fine nation, or we've stumbled upon a plot hole. What year is Lucy from?
2006.
Oh, I take it back. Oh, for some reason I thought it was 93. I don't know why I thought that. I was like, oh, wait, hang on. How does she know about Harry Potter? All right. Sorry. My bad. Don't worry about it.
Wasn't she born in 93?
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
No. She's from our time.
Great.
So you've got this actually lovely description of the two of them, because it does give you a really good idea of what these two look like together.
Yeah.
And it actually tells us what Lucy Miller used to play with when she was younger. So It's all fun.
Then Eris Bueller pops up and explains to the Doc and Lucy that Luna Park basically used to be the plot of The Beach.
It is. You know, I know you said the plot of The Beach, but it's also like the plot of Beaches. You expect Meryl Streep to be along any minute. And, you know, now it's turned into Top Gun meets some sort of, you know, surf paradise 1960s Rebel Without a Cause movie.
I'd watch that.
Actually, that's far better than this episode.
Yeah.
If you're thinking about getting this episode, go and watch Rebel Without a Cause instead.
Yeah, classic.
So you have... And they say this a few times, that this place is 100% natural. The hippies that are here, you know, have been very good. They've not built very much. It's 100% natural. All of this grav boarding, it's natural slopes. It's a natural wormhole. It's a natural ice cave. You can go spelunking in natural rivers.
Yeah.
And you have all of this, and all of this was checked out by archaeologists before they built this pleasure dome. Thankfully, at this point, Lucy stops this nonsense and goes off to get some food.
Right.
The doctor, meanwhile...
Yeah, he's asking about weapons.
He also asks how the fact with... Since the hippies... because Lucy says, I don't have any money.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, you're right.
Lucy says, I don't have any money. How do I pay?
No, wait, I think she says, like, oh, the doc will pay.
And Eris Bueller turns around and goes, you only pay what you can afford. And the doctor just goes, what the fuck? How do you keep this place going?
Yeah. Pardon me while I shoot myself in the face. That is ridiculous.
You know, the doctor says it's a laudable policy, but then turns around and just goes, well, this is just nonsense, and we agree with him.
Mm.
So they wander off to go and talk to Kai Winn to find out what the hell is going on.
Yeah, but hang on, wait, sorry. Doesn't he also ask her if they have weapons that they could use against these monsters?
Yeah, and she just ignores him, and they don't.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Because they're a bunch of hippies.
Yeah, I guess so. The fact that he's asking about weapons to combat this unseen enemy still does suggest that he's now buying into this, right?
Oh, I think he started buying into it the moment he saw the body. He's been around the galaxy a lot, you know. He's traveled to far-off places, and wherever he lands, shit happens. So he knows that there are two possible things here. Number one, something accidental happened.
Yeah.
Or number two, the same thing that happens to him wherever he lands, monsters turn up and try to kill people. Which, to be honest, Lucy Miller does mention later when she actually says, wherever I go with you, there are monsters. And he says, yeah, I do tend to find them.
Oh, I guess, yeah.
So he buys into it. He's credulous. You know, he's not skeptical at all. So he goes off to talk to Kai, who he now believes. But
love your hair, by the way.
Oh, no.
You're doing a Tintin. I love it.
I know.
No, it's good.
Desperately needs cutting. So Amy and Farl are now arguing over food. And they have a plan, but Farl doesn't want to do it, or Amy doesn't want to do it. And Lucy turns up, and as she always does, she goes and sits with the female and sympathizes.
Yeah, because the Incredible Farl, he has exited at this point, being a total chauvinist asshole, basically. He leaves and says something to the effect of, you know what, when you come to your senses and you finally agree with me, you know where to find me. So then Lucy and Amy have this girl moment. And
which is actually very good. It's actually a good character moment.
Yeah, it's nice. No, it's good. We should have more moments like that. In fact, we're missing that kind of moment between High and Death. That's where we should have it.
Mm. And, you know, Lucy lets slip that she's, in fact, a time traveller.
Yeah.
And, you know,
reaction is basically just like, oh, cool.
Yeah, and, you know, this is obviously the future. They're used to this by this point.
I guess, yeah.
And, you know, Lucy turns around and says, what the hell are you two doing here? Because you don't fit in. You're not hippies, and you don't want to go spelunking. So she doesn't answer, but says, let's go outside. There's somewhere I want to take you.
Yeah, so they're going to go for a walk. Nice. Exciting. All right. Anyway, cut to Kai Winn, who's stumbled upon the Incredible Farl, who is very busy throwing rocks into the water and being just generally depressed and whinging. And so this is where Kai Winn then, I guess to stir the water, goes, I really just want to apologize. people have been saying stuff, you know, because you're a Githian and whatnot. And he alludes to the humans on in the camp having said all these racist things. We haven't heard any of that yet.
And, you know, he is at this point quite blatantly on Fall's side, or the Githian side.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's sort of saying, the humans, the bastards.
Yeah, exactly. And Fall, obviously quite perturbed by this, he had no idea that people were talking, well, speaking ill of him behind his back. He gets up and is now quite enraged. So he, yeah, exits stage left.
And then Eris Bueller and the Doctor turn up to talk to Kai Winn. Then Eris mentions Rosa again.
Yeah.
For what we seem to be is no apparent reason.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But we do find this time...
Very important to the story.
We do find out, though, that she got hit and has been unconscious.
Yeah.
So maybe it's the aliens that have got to her, or the monsters. We don't know at this point.
Yeah, we have no idea.
So, HD, sadly.
Oh, now we get the dude cutscene.
Yeah.
Oh, this is terrible. Should we have a soundbite of maybe the dude talk? What do you say?
Soundbite.
Soundbite.
Your graph board will make you rebound in the low gravity. It's just like bouncing off a snow ridge, only way cooler. Okay. The killer part's the apex. If you're not feeling too wussy, you can try a spin or a varial flip.
Kablamo. Nice.
Well, wasn't that great?
Oh, well.
So,
yeah, in case anyone didn't believe us at this point, in case people thought, oh, these two dudes, they're just talking out of their ear holes. They have no idea what they're saying. They're exaggerating. I'm sorry, case in point, QE.
No, we're there not.
Right. Cut to Eris Bueller and Kai Winn. Eris Bueller now is fully convinced that there are monsters. She's fully convinced that her boyfriend, Kai Winn, has been telling the truth all along and basically just apologizes.
Yeah, the Doctor basically says to Kai, right, I believe you. What's going on?
Yeah.
And Kai says that, you know, he saw them. He saw the monsters attacking people. He got out alive and didn't bother telling people. And
he even claims that there was some kid that was attacked by these monsters once, but then didn't want to tell anyone about it because maybe people would think that he was completely bonkers. Very convenient. Who is this kid? Does anyone know anything about this person? Is there an affidavit?
Kai is, at this point, completely full of shit.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Doctor just basically turns around and goes, well, why haven't you left? Kai then does call the Doctor on his bullshit by Kai does turn around and say to the Doctor, well, you haven't left either.
Oh, so, yeah, yeah.
And to be fair, that's actually a fairly good point from Kai, because the Doctor is there to help out. Why doesn't he think Kai is there to help out? Because Kai is trying to warn people, so why should he leave?
Okay.
Meanwhile, Amy and Lucy, in the good character moment continuation, don spacesuits.
Yeah.
Lucy whinges that they do not flatter her figure. So obviously Primark don't do spacesuits.
Nope.
And Amy just snarkily...
Thank God they don't, by the way. Those seams, they tear all the time.
Amy really does say, rather snarkily to Lucy, well, they tend to consider protection against the freezing vacuum of space when designing these things.
I guess so.
So, Primark spacesuits, not the way to go.
Yeah. So we have a nice little scene. They're doing a spacewalk. Everything's nice and beautiful. Lucy is just in awe of the scenery, of the view. And we're treated to the Githian marriage rules. Basically, we find out what they've been talking about all along, Amy Licious and the Incredible Fall, that is. Githians are not allowed to marry outside of their species. Amy and Fall are, I guess, married. And thus, Fall's family have put a bounty on their asses.
Which is a really, really good story point.
Yeah.
If it was ever picked up on ever again.
It is of consequence to nothing in the story whatsoever.
But thankfully, this completely pointless plotline is interspersed now with someone screaming.
Yeah. It's super creepy, by the way. Mega creepy. You get vibes of... don't worry, I'm not going to spoil another movie for you. Have you seen Event Horizon?
Yes.
There you go. You get kind of vibes, like Event Horizon vibes. I got it anyway.
You know, and the intercom and the spaceship communicator voices are actually quite well modulated. The sound effects are actually very good. And, you know, the screaming over the intercom is very good. You know, I don't want people to take away that there was nothing in this episode that we actually liked. You know, I think that, as has always been, the music, the sound effects, well, with the exception of glam rock, are amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. So cut back down to the surface, where the Doctor receives a call, well, from Lucy, right? And he's quite upset that she's out on a spacewalk, didn't inform him of this. But she basically goes, listen, we've found another dead body. It's some person named Kelly, some dude that Amy Licious met on the shuttle to Phobos. And he's, I don't know, where is this body?
Well, this is a bit confusing, because
they say it's outside the dome,
which is where Amy and Lucy are. The Doctor and that team are inside the dome and do seemingly take quite a while to get there.
Yeah. Anyway, people start assuming, okay, this is the work of the Phobians. Let's basically scramble to save the day.
So, HD are surfing the gnarly ice grav place. Honestly, it's so badly defined, you can't imagine what they're doing at all.
Yeah. I think at this point we can just basically go placeholder sport.
Yeah. They're going down some sort of mountainside, and Drew spots something.
Yeah.
In the distance. He tries to warn Hayden. Hayden, on the other hand, thinks Drew is being a scaredy cat, totally ignores it.
Yeah. And is then thrown off his grav board by whatever it is that the Drewmeister has seen.
And cue some really, really bad screaming. There is, I mean bad in the way that this sounds like he is literally being torn apart.
Wow. I don't remember thinking that was so bad. Oh, yeah, I'm looking forward to soundbiting that, presumably.
Nice try, Drew! You nearly had me there, but...
Anyway, Amy Licious and Lucy Miller, they have seen what's happened, and they head in that general direction.
Drew's fine, Hayden isn't.
Yeah, so...
He's not actually been ripped apart by monsters, he is just sports injury.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But the grav board also took out the monster.
Yeah. So, hang on, has it already? Because I think Lucy at this point starts... this is something we need to track as well. Lucy just running headfirst into the most dangerous situation imaginable and trying to be the hero. And actually succeeding as well, because she starts, throwing rocks at this monster.
She has no fear. You know, this... And this is something that we've had through the last four episodes, that she is afraid of these things, because she says as much, but she actually is the hero in some of these stories so far.
Yeah.
That she is literally throwing rocks at this Phobian purely to lead it away from HD and Amy Licious.
Yeah.
You know, she is leading it away. The monster is aggravated, Lucy is running and throwing rocks and running, and she is stupid.
Yeah, she is
brave.
So dumb.
Yeah, but brave.
Sure, brave. I would say it's dumb. I'm sorry, it is completely dumb. Also, bear in mind, in previous episodes, she has had a certain sense of self-preservation, running it towards an unknown foe, throwing rocks at it after you've seen the torn apart body of one of its victims, and you've had a sleepless night because you witnessed the shock in the face of the one person who survived the whole ordeal. I don't think you do that. Anyway,
she's
suspended.
Yeah, well, no, you know, Lucy is the hero, along with the Doctor. They have to do heroic things, but Lucy does it in a way that she is trying to help these people, but she is obviously terrified of this.
Sure.
You know, because she's whinging on the intercom to the Doctor at this point.
Yeah.
And she's going, no, it's chasing me. No, I'm running away. No, help, help, help. I'm hoping it falls into a crevice.
Sure. All right. So, whatever. Let's speed through this a little bit, because honestly, I can't even really remember in what order stuff happens. Either way, Doc and company, they arrive. The Phobian has, as you said, it's been knocked, I guess, unconscious is what they presume. It's not dead, but it's inoperable, as they'll soon find out. The Doctor identifies it as a robot.
Yeah, and he thinks, right, after talking to Eris, who explains that these robots, they belong here. They are...
They're like drones or something. Yeah.
He thinks he's figured out what's going on. Mm. So he's had the Scooby-Doo moment, and he heads over there. But meanwhile, back at camp, Fall is having a racist moment with a group of humans.
Yeah,
the group
of humans. Is he having a racist moment, or does he assume that? Well, he assumes that they have. Oh, yeah. Sorry. They have a race. You're right. You're totally right. They say some. They're like, oh God. Well, you know, we're just having a bit of a laugh about, you know, what with you Githians being the way that you are. Fall smash. He goes ape nuts.
Yeah, and you know,
understandably so.
Because Kai Wynn has turned around and said that these people were making fun of you behind your back.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but the leader of the group, the one who is slammed in the face by Fall, do you know who plays him?
No.
Very small bit part, but continuing his work experience, it's Jake McGann.
Oh, Jake. What a guy.
So he's back for another episode, and this time he gets hit in the face.
Nice.
Basically, Kai Wynn turns up and tells Fall that A Malicious is in the med bay.
Yeah, she had a bit of an ordeal. He obviously is quite upset, heads off to the med bay, and the second he has left the after-ski place, Kai Wynn does a 180 and starts talking to these humans about Githians as though Githians are just savages. That's actually what he says, isn't it? Like, they're just primitives. But a moment ago, he was talking to Fall about humans as being the uncivilized ones. So he's just trying to wind everyone up.
And thus we get our villain of the episode.
Yeah, exactly.
So the Doctor and HD are in medbay. D is very happy that H is still alive.
Are they basically Ant and Dec, by the way?
They are basically Ant and Dec. only slightly funnier.
Yeah.
And Fall arrives and basically tells Amy off for going for a walk with Lucy. Lucy, you know, does what she does best and is the protector of all females in the universe. And the Doctor is just not having any of this. You know, he's not being intimidated by anyone.
Yeah, I'm not impressed by his little soliloquy, by the way.
What, the Doctor's or Fall's?
The Doctor's.
It's good, but it is only in here for, spoilers, what happens later. There is no reason for him to go off on a Sylvester McCoy-style rant about fear at this point.
See, I don't know anything about that. I haven't seen any Sly McCoy stories, but it seemed to me like a really, really low-budget reenactment of the, you know, the finale in Blade Runner. You've seen Blade Runner, I hope.
Yes.
Good. Thank God. Oh, I'm really scared that I'm going to spoil some other big movie for you. Yeah, check the blooper reel, people, in case you're wondering what I'm talking about. All right.
Snape killed Dumbledore.
Right, okay. Now we lost 50% of our listenership there. All right. So
anyway, the Doctor now finally gets around to go and talk to the person who he believes knows what's going on. So he goes off to Kai Wynn.
Yeah.
Lucy starts having a conversation with the Doctor about all the things the Doctor has seen. And, you know, now he does even more soliloquying and we don't really care.
No.
And basically, he accuses Kai of being the one behind all of this.
Yeah.
And ultimately, Kai turns around and...
whips
off the fake mask that he's got on, admits that he was the ghost that terrorized the mansion, one that ran the water slide, and we get the Scooby-Doo moment of...
It would have worked too.
If it wasn't for those meddling kids.
This is so Scooby-Doo at this point. It is ridiculous.
Massively Scooby-Doo. Right, yeah, so Kai Wynn basically comes clean. And says, yes, he's been doing this. But you see, the reason I've been doing this is that there's an even badder baddie on Phobos living inside the wormhole. I'm speeding now, aren't I?
No. That's actually what happens. And so, in summary, and there is a very good reason to speed through this bit on the grounds that it makes no sense. You have been going around killing people because there's something that would start killing people.
If you didn't.
If you did. So what what this is your plan?
Yeah. And so inside the wormhole, it transpires, there's a god of fear from some alternate dimension who feeds off fear. And all these thrill seekers, the level of fear that they experience when they jump down the wormhole or they grab board or do some other gnarly shit, that's giving the fear god, I guess, sustenance so that it can come out of the wormhole and take over the place. However, in killing people, he's hoping, correct me if I'm wrong, by the way, he's hoping that he will scare people away from Phobos so that there will be no more people who are scared on Phobos, thus giving sustenance to the god of fear.
Well, that's what we know at this point, but he changes his story in about 10 minutes, so...
Oh, really? Because, oh, I didn't even remember
that. Yeah, because he now wants to kill the god in the wormhole. And it's true fear versus fake fear, and this is the least sane ending to a Doctor Who episode since Time in the Rani. So, anyway,
yeah,
moving on.
Okay,
he shoots our heroes.
Yeah,
and at this point, we're wishing he would shoot us. Anyway, Fall and Amylicious have a heart to heart.
Yes.
And Eren basically turns around and says, well, Dee has just seen the alien phobian things dragging the Doctor and Lucy away. And the Doctor thought that Kai was the one that did it all. But now Kai's gone missing, the Doctor's gone missing. So anyway, Eren and Drew try to be the heroes at this point and take Azabi up the mountain.
Yeah.
Honestly, taking Azabi up the mountain would make this episode far better. Amy stays behind, looks after Hayden, and Fall basically goes off to be big gorilla and punch things.
Yeah, exactly. So then cut to the top of the mountain where Kai Winn is, well, resuscitating Lucy and the Doc. They're tied up, they're restrained, and here's the plan, basically. Kai is going to throw them into the wormhole because, and this may actually be something that he revealed earlier, I'm not sure. I don't want to look at the notes. I want to see if I can remember this. The Doc takes a certain level of pleasure from saving people and taking risks, right? And Kai Winn is thinking, you know what? I believe that it is that sensation that you go through every time that you volunteer your services that has been sustaining the god of fear since your arrival. And because of you, basically, this god is going to come out of the wormhole. So now I'm going to take you and your assistant and chuck you into the wormhole, hoping that that will somehow kill the god. Logic literally has gone out the window.
There is no logic at this point.
Or because, I misunderstood that.
What you've just said actually is not quite correct.
Okay,
but
sorry.
What you've said... No. What you've said would make logical sense if they'd have said it in the story.
Okay, so...
It's more about... fear is hard to digest by the fear monster. So
what kind of... What the shit? This is a god of fear.
No, yes, but...
Oh, this is the true fear, the fake fear,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so. You have euphoria is apparently the spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down.
Oh, I remember
and
that line.
It is just, you know, they're going all Mary Poppins on us. Fear is flying everywhere. Then the Doctor and Lucy thankfully get fucking rescued by the heroes of this episode, which are Fall, Eren, and Drew.
Yeah.
Drew basically spelunks down a cliff. Eren and Fall turn up on the Azabi. Then the Phobian wakes up again, but they've already knocked Kai out, so what's going on? And thankfully, the Doctor has his sonic screwdriver and uses it as a fucking screwdriver
to unscrew the leg of this fake Phobian, this drone.
Spoiler alert, when I give the score for this, at least half of my score is purely for the sonic screwdriver actually being used as a screwdriver in this episode.
Well, then we get the... At some point, we need to get this freaking god voice, right? Is that now?
Yeah, it's now.
All right, so the god of fear starts talking to the team through Eris Bueller, and can't really remember what this god says, but it's something to the effect of, I win, And then the dog starts talking to it. So I've taken over Eris Bueller. I'm now going to take over all of you, and I'm going to make you super duper scared by talking to Kai Winn through Eris Bueller and talking to the Incredible Fall through Amy Licious. And your concern and fear for your partner's well-being is going to sustain me and give me energy. That, to me, by the way, is authentic fear. That is not... There is no spoonful of enthusiasm in having your partner being taken over by some god of fear.
No, this was like the exact opposite of what was meant to be going on about the euphoric fear and the non-euphoric fear.
Exactly, exactly.
And, you know, at this point, we do find out some of the other bits of the episode, thankfully, okay. But it's so completely hidden in the shit that we find out that Drew, when the god says, right, Amy, Fall, right, you're a purr, Kai and Aaron, you're a purr,
and Drew and Hayden,
you're a purr. Drew goes, no, just, you know, just bros.
Yeah,
and then the god of fear goes, no.
Oh.
No.
Come on, please.
There is some sort of gay bromance going on there. We then find out that the god of fear made the moon in the form that it was. So, let me get this right.
Yeah.
The god of fear made an extreme sports park. If it can do that, why didn't it do something better? It made the gnarly slopes. It made the... And it's just like...
It even provided an atmosphere.
Yeah, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, anyway.
So the doc
goes, all right, so you're just telling us that you're going to take over this entire planet. Why haven't you already? Presumably, you don't have the power just yet. You're still pretty much in the wormhole. And this is proven right, because the god is just sort of at a loss for words. They restrain Eris Bueller. The doc puts... I'm speeding now, by the way. Stop me whenever you have something to complain about in this story.
Sorry, you want me to stop you when I have something to complain about? Won't get any words in. So, they do. They tie up Bueller because, you know, the doctor calls the god of fear on all of its shit and just says, you are making this completely up. You have no power.
Yeah.
So he basically attaches to the 3-kilometer long bungee rope of death.
Yeah.
And
is now going to cowabunga into the wormhole because now it's back to normal again and apparently... True fear is what's killing this god, or is what's hurting this god. A moment ago, Kai Winn was saying that the fear that you know is what has probably sustained it enough to bring it out of the wormhole. Now it's what's keeping it in the wormhole.
Oh, it changes again in a minute, because bear in mind that, long story, very short, the Doctor and Eren Bueller go right down into the 3 kilometers down. The god of fear whinges at the Doctor. The Doctor goes, I am not afraid of you. I face my fear. I've seen evil since the dawn of time. So that is actually from a Sylvester McCoy episode, but he repeats it here.
Oh, really? Okay.
We've seen evil from the past, but I've seen evil in the future too. And it starts whinging and it starts blowing up and I'm making it sound far better than it actually is.
The only cool thing about this entire monologue, sorry to cut you off, the only cool thing, in my opinion, is when he says, I also have the fear of what I am capable of doing in my future.
And that kills it.
And that is, I mean, it hasn't been written yet in the chronology, but that can totally be, you can draw a red line between what he says there and the Night of the Doctor.
Yes.
Which is awesome.
Absolutely perfectly straight line, even though Night of the Doctor hasn't even been imagined at this point.
Exactly.
But sadly, my second least favourite episode of New Who is an episode from last season called The Rings of Ak-Ten.
Yeah.
Which is where the Doctor, doing a monologue about fear, destroys a god.
Oh.
Admittedly, it's the Doctor and Clara in this one.
Yeah.
But the Doctor does a monologue on fear and destroys a god of fear and things.
Oh, shit. I had not thought about that.
This is basically the ending of the Rings of Ak-Ten, except the Rings of Ak-Ten came far later.
Yeah, Rings of Ak-Ten is the ending of this.
Yeah, but they're both abysmal, so don't watch either. So, anyway...
Abysmal, you say?
It's awful.
Yeah. Cut to the abyss.
So now, they've gone down 3 kilometres on the bungee rope. The Doctor and Eris are dead because, you know, skinless. Remember, we've had this episode already. But they arrive back at the top again, only this time Eris really is dead.
Yeah. That's kind of sad.
Yeah, it is kind of sad because she was one of the nice ones in this episode.
Yeah, and when she died, she was completely convinced that her partner in life, Kai Wynn, had been telling the truth all along. The reason she does die is because he was full of shit. And now we fade to her funeral pile.
Yes, and the doctor and Kai basically have this conversation that now that this creature's gone, Phobos can be a good place. And the doctor turns around to Kai and goes, well, now the love of your life is dead, you better go and do something and make this a good place, because Eris loved this place, she wanted to stay here, just fucking go and live in her memory. Whereas what I would be doing is arresting him and putting him on the first jail.
Yeah, exactly. This guy's a murderer.
The doctor, I think, has just realised how pointless this episode is and wants to leave.
Mm.
Lucy and the doctor have a little point about, you know, whether the doctor is actually far scarier than the things he's fighting. Yeah. Which is a nice point, because we all know he is.
Yeah, it is just one line, though, and it is kind of ham-fisted. But yeah, it is a nice point, sure.
So
they leave.
So HD have a small conversation, and basically Drew summons up the courage to tell him that he actually really loves him and wants to be with him for the rest of his life.
Yeah, we get zero closure, though.
Unfortunately, no, because
yeah, no,
Rosa wakes up.
Yep.
Thank God Rosa is in this.
Rosa, it turns out, is the headhunter, and she arrived shortly before Doc and Lucy, had a tumble, got a little bit of a thump on her noggin, fell unconscious, missed the entire shitty episode, and woke up just after Doc and Lucy had left.
So she's a bit pissed, because, yeah, you know, she's missed Lucy Miller, and she is now blatantly after Lucy.
Yeah.
And she's pissed that she missed Lucy. When she realises what's happened, she'll just be grateful that she missed it.
Yeah.
But she promises next time she will get Lucy Miller. and we just end the entire Scooby-Doo episode at that point.
Yep. Right.
It's review time. I think it's your turn to go first on this one.
I think it is my turn.
Do your best.
Well, I'm going to keep it short. What can I say that summarizes the rubbish nature of this completely pointless waste of my time any better than what we literally just said over the past, I'm going to say, roughly 50 minutes or so? This episode, it had a few highlights. Those highlights are, let me think. Okay, so I enjoyed the characters of High Def. I wish we had gotten to know them at all, but I enjoyed them. I thought it was kind of cool that they were on a Martian moon, but I hated the fact that it was a freaking roller coaster. That sucked. The Foley was good. Okay, here's the thing. There is very little positive that I can say about the story. It's kind of fluff that leads on from the previous story that was great to the next story that is, spoiler alert, also pretty cool. But this story in itself offers nothing but that completely pointless Hanna-Barbera level of entertainment where you get a little bit of a thrill, you get a little bit of a laugh, but it leads nowhere, and it is of no consequence to anyone. You could totally leave this out of the canon of Doctor Who and no one would care. The characters could not relate to them. The Doctor, hardly in this. Sure, you said give it a bonus point for using the sonic screwdriver as an actual screwdriver. I'll go one above that and say that the uncharacteristic lack of a rapey character earns this story a bonus decimal point. All in all, I'm going to give this a 1.6. There you go. You're welcome, Phobos. That's me. It's Christmas time. I'm feeling generous.
I gave it a 1.6 as well.
Oh, really? Nice.
Yes. So I think we actually pretty much agree totally on this episode.
Okay.
It's actually quite a hard one to review, because the ideas that are in the episode
are really interesting.
Really, really good. You have a fear monster, which could be so amazingly well dealt with. You have adrenaline junkies, a pleasure planet. All of these are really good ideas. What they did was that they had a load of really good ideas, threw them together, and forgot to put a coherent story around them.
Yeah, but sorry to interrupt your review, but do you not think that maybe the problem here is that it's actually just a one-episode story? If this had been a two-episode story, you could actually have fleshed out the characters, you could have done something with all these plot elements, but you didn't. Instead, it just turned into this very linear path to, oh, who is wearing the rubber mask?
You could have done. Would Phobos have benefited from being a two-parter? I don't know, because it could very well have just been a two-parter with the same thing, but more stretched out, which would have been abysmal. And it would have got a far lower score because we would have been bored even more.
Yeah, okay, that's true.
The problem is that you have here, you have Catriona Olsen playing Amy. And we know Catriona Olsen is a great voice actor, actress. And she does loads of these stuff because she is very versatile. But you hardly get to know Amy. High def, are a one note set of characters and probably shouldn't be.
Yeah.
You have Timothy West and Neris Hughes, who are British acting institutions, who are incredibly underused, especially Neris Hughes as Eris. Timothy West has a great vocal range. He has, acting talents that go far beyond audiobooks. He is, a Shakespearean actor, and he's given dialogue that must have been wrist-slittingly awful to read.
Yeah, probably.
Let alone have to speak.
I hope he got paid a lot.
I hope he did as well. It did leave me feeling as cold as the moon of Mars, really. It's a 1.6, and I agree. And it doesn't quite come together. And, even the dialogue between Lucy Miller and the Doctor isn't funny, or it's not as funny as it has been. There's no real snappy, witty Lucy Miller retorts. There's no real snappy Doctor jibes. The Doctor is just hardly in this episode.
Yeah.
So overall, I really wanted to like this episode, but I didn't.
That's a damn shame.
Yeah, but looking ahead, we've been on Phobos. A couple of seasons later, we will actually go to Deimos, the other moon.
Oh, cool.
In a far better episode.
Nice, I'm looking forward to that.
But next time is No More Lies, which is completely different. It is an English garden party with dinosaurs.
Yes. I listened to it just the other day. I liked it. Spoiler alert, guys. I liked it.
And the guest cast, as always have been, and it is amazing. But next week, they're actually given stuff to do.
I know. Yeah. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to this review. I hope you enjoyed yourselves. You know what? Here's just sort of take a little meta step. I think, because I occasionally, narcissistically listen back to our old episodes, the ones where the lowest scores that we have dealt, those episode reviews are the most enjoyable to re-listen to. So, I'm looking forward to re-listening to this one a couple of times, to be honest. Yes, I'm a narcissist. Fuck it. Whatever.
I hardly listen to the episodes back where I'm in on the ground, so I can't stop listening to myself. So sorry for you out there, viewers. But no, my favorite Who Back When episodes are Edge of Destruction, because while you completely mock...
Yeah, but that's because you love Edge of Destruction.
One of my favourite episodes. Yeah, but you are very funny about it when you're doing it. And my ultimate favourite Who Back When that you have ever done is The Web Planet. I think that between you and Flappy on The Web Planet, you do deserve a medal.
Excuse me, and your fantastic audio review.
Which I also try not to listen back to, so I just skip over that bit. Everyone knows from listening to this that I adore Doctor Who, even the bad ones. And I listened to Phobos twice, I listened to Horror of Glam Rock, at least twice. And even the bad ones here, we're giving Phobos a 1.6. We gave Glamrock, I think, something like a 1.8. And these are nothing compared to the really bad Doctor Who episodes that are on television. Zabi got 0.2, Edge of Destruction got 0.6. So.
Yeah. People, you gotta follow this man on Twitter. JD is at Marius Kane. I believe you spelled that with a K, do you?
Although I am thinking of changing it to a C just to ruin the title sequence.
I am at Ponkin, so hit us up on Twitter. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/whobackwhen. You can check us out on Google Plus. That's Google Plus slash plus whobackwhen.
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year, everyone! Shama lama ding dong. Cha-chao.
Whobackwhen.